So it's a call to order, the regular meeting and public hearing of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, January 11th, 2018. First item of business is to call the roll. So Commissioner Gildersleeve. Commissioner Gildersleeve let us know she would not be able to attend. Commissioner Heller also let us know he would not be able to attend. Commissioner Ryan. Commissioner Miller.
Here.
Commissioner Von Trapp.
Present.
Commissioner Lucky.
Yep.
So we have a quorum. Next item is to approve tonight's agenda. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
I'll second that motion.
Motion by Lucky and second by Commissioner Ryan. Are there any comments or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving tonight's agenda as done, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion is approved. It is unanimous. Next item of business is the approval of minutes for December 14, 2017. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Lucky, second by Commissioner Miller. Any comments or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes for December 14, 2017, please say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. It's also unanimous. Next item of business is public comment on non-agenda items. This is your opportunity to come to the commission and speak to us on something that is not on tonight's agenda. Is there anyone who wishes to speak to us on something that is not on tonight's agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number four, which is a public hearing on the development agreement for Tanner Electric headquarters. Who would like to give us our introduction?
Lynn, you want to kick it off or you want me to?
Just before you go, just recognize that Commissioner Heller has joined us.
Okay, so
you're up.
Tanner Electric is our...
Sorry, pardon me.
Yeah.
Lynn, is there another packet anywhere?
There is.
Yeah.
Yep, I'll grab one for you.
Just tell me where I'll get it.
It's on the front desk.
Okay, next.
So our other staff can fill in any gaps that I miss. But so Tanner Electric is located on the east side of town, and they actually have a really unique shaped parcel. It's very skinny and long, and it stretches from 140th Street down to North Bend Way. It's probably 1,500 feet long, just a guess, and only about 100 feet wide, maybe 120 feet wide or so. They've been in the development process with their architect for probably a year or two or so now. And they have at some point decided to break up their project into three phases. Phase one is their administration building, about 8,000 square feet of new admin space. And phases two and three are sometime in the next 5 to 10 years. Phase one, all of that activity is occurring on the north side of that property. And phases two and three are more on the south side. So three phases. This is a development agreement, so it has to run through Planning Commission. We're looking for a recommendation from Planning Commission to move forward to City Council. What the development agreement is for is to delay the half-street frontage improvements on North Bend Way. So that would be curb, gutter, sidewalk, landscaping. That section of North Bend Way is very rural right now, as you probably all know. There's not any sidewalks along there. And the applicant's not really sure where exactly their entrance is going to be from North Bend Way, where they do have everything nailed down on the north side of their project in terms of required landscaping, utilities, the building, etc. So this is just one of the necessary steps. If I missed anything, Lynn or Dave, fill it in, or we can answer questions, or at some point at the applicant, Steve's here tonight too, so maybe he'll get a chance to address you as well.
Okay. And I'm sorry I was remiss in just introducing our staff. We're joined this evening by Mike Sippo from Public Works, Lynn Hyde, our illustrious associate planner, and also CED, what is the title?
Economic Development Manager and Planner.
Congratulations.
Cool. Thanks.
Our CED Director, David Miller, and of course our Public Works Director, Mark Regas. With that, our public hearing, the new procedures for our Planning Commission is to allow our public to speak for a period of 5 minutes. I'm not sure if you've elected somebody in particular to speak on all of the behalf, which we will extend you maybe an additional minute or two to do so. When you want to speak, please state your name and address for the record and speak clearly. And with that, we'll go ahead and open up the public hearing at 7:05. Who would like to speak?
Well, I'd love to. My name is Steve Walter, General Manager of Tanner Electric Co-op. I'm just here to answer questions, but Mark hit it on the head. We've been working on this project. It's been an ongoing project for about 4 years now, a couple years now with the city, and it is an awkward kind of parcel to develop out just because it is so long and skinny. And so as we work through this project, just to help, we serve in and around North Bend, our members, we're owned by our members, and to keep some of the cost down, we're putting more of our effort on the north side of the property to build the admin building. And then sometime in the near future, as Mark mentioned, with 5-10 years, we plan on developing the other side of the property. And at that time, we'll know better where the entrance and parking and everything will work. So we'll put more energy in there. So if you have any questions, our architect was supposed to be here, but he got pretty sick. So I told him to stay away from us. I'll be happy to answer any questions you have for you. But I appreciate you taking the time to review. And I'm here to answer any questions I can have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else?
Hi, I'm David Tracy. I live at 3825 457th Avenue in the Southeast. And my concern is I'm within the 300-foot boundary of this project, and the stand of trees that is proposed to be raised for this project presents a pretty sizable acoustic barrier for our neighborhood from the noise from the freeway, as well as a visual separation. And we're very sensitive about moving our neighborhood to the line between the industrial side of residential sign. We're really, really concerned about that interface. And this particular stand of trees is real important, and if it's raised and we get all that noise coming down, that affects our reset value, our enjoyment, and everything else in our property. And we figure that's crucial to maintaining the separation, unless you want to put a sound wall or something along the highway. That's my main concern, is losing that barrier.
Okay.
Good night. Right behind you is a plat map. Would you point at your parcel?
It would be over on the right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Lot 13.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to speak? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing, 7:12. Yes, Commissioner Ryan.
Chair, I think it's only fair and appropriate that I declare that I might have a conflict of interest here tonight. I have good friends with Steve Walter back here. I've been for years at Rotary. The commission can vote. You can ask questions and answer questions, but if you want me to remain silent, I will.
I'll just ask, would you financially benefit in one way or the other from a decision from the commission?
I receive power from no, sir.
I would imagine a lot of us receive power from Tanner Electric, including myself. So I'm hoping that wouldn't present a conflict. With that, commission.
Yes, commission, I'll feel the same.
I would agree.
Yeah.
We certainly would appreciate his input. Would you agree, Mr. Chair?
I would agree. Okay, questions?
I just had a general question as far as the standards. Would they, because they're not like vested to today's standards, right? For something that would be 10 years out, it would have whatever standards you have in place with them.
Correct. So phase one would be vested to whatever they applied for, which was probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. Phases two and three would be for that future date.
What would be the mitigation of lighting off of 140th and to the residential across the street? Is there going to be lighting standards?
Well, all of our lighting standards require that the lighting not leave the site to mitigate light pollution. And in fact, on 140th there, because there is residential on the other side, we are very cognizant of the fact that it's a residential road. So there's additional setbacks required and tree buffers. There's a 40-foot tree buffer required, which is substantially larger than anywhere else in our city. And I know it's not perfect for the adjacent neighbors, but it is in an effort to mitigate those negative impacts, including light. So there's not light. There won't be light leaving the site. Do you remember if there's a light at the entrance?
Okay. There is.
There is a light at the entrance?
The currency of light right now that faces the street light over to Wood River. It's on a street light pole right in front of our site. But all the lights on our property are the low light, flat lenses.
So, yeah, in our code we require full cutoff, and that we do require a lighting plan that shows that their foot candles are not leaving the site of going on to adjacent sites.
I'm very aware of Tanner Electric's response to emergencies all hours of the day and night. I see it. I live on the Middle Fork River, and a lot of trees across our road. So my questions are not intended to be negative, but I just think of them as a past industrial employee. My presumption is that Tanner's crew is warming up in the morning, that they have engines running, getting everything ready to go. Is that going to be close to the 140th access, or is it going to be further in interior?
Steve can speak better to this than me, but I believe most of our industrial, quote-unquote industrial use is more on the south and central portion of their site rather than the north side. The north side's more of the future administration building, and there's the 40-foot wide landscaping buffer. There is an entrance, but I think it will be predominantly used by the employees that work there, so won't be as much by the larger trucks, but I'll be stand corrected.
No, that's Steve. Right, Mark. And most, nothing's changing for the operation side. Operation side stays exactly where it's at. To the discussion around the sound and stuff, you know, the lot's a little over 140 feet wide, and the building takes up the majority of that. It's a two-story building with a tall roof, so it's gonna act as a buffer as well for the sound. But what you're going to see is the same amount of we're not growing at all in the amount of employees. You're going to have your about 7 employees working out of that office there, and still all the trucks and everything will still be on the far side next to North Midway.
And again, the purpose of tonight to bring this to Planning Commission is the development agreement is to delay the improvements on the south side. It's not to take apart the site plan. So.
Could you explain on page 2 of 14 under phase 1, the design and build paved parking lots, what you mean by parking lot landscaping to be increased to 12% of asphalt paving?
Yeah, I can speak to that one. So we have in our landscape standards for parking lots over a greater size, 10% of the total vehicular area has to be landscaped. But because there's the 40-foot buffer, and there's one spot where it's not going to be, it's like 35 or so. So to mitigate that, they're increasing the parking lot landscaping to 12%. So it's the total vehicular area is the asphalt paving.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Also, number 8, the variance to reduce the center line distance.
So that's out of King County Road Standards, and which we have partially adopted, and also WSDOT standards. What we try to do is have offsets from intersections. What you don't want, you want intersections to line up. You don't want them just off 20 feet or 50 feet because it becomes a public safety problem. If two vehicles want to turn left, they're going to hit each other. Whereas if they come together at the same time, whoever is first has the right of way. So in this particular case, I think for 140th Street, it's designated a collector. And so I think the requirement's roughly 200 feet, and they were slightly underneath that. It was about 180 feet or 160 feet, but we just thought, hey, this is not a public road intersection. There's not the vehicles per day leaving Tanner Electric in that direction. It's probably going to be on the order of one every 5 or 10, 15 minutes. There's just not that much traffic at that location. So I believe we already granted a variance on that one. So.
The only thought I had on that was the intended user may not be the user 25 years from now as far as volume of traffic. I'm assuming that's been thought through.
You know, Tanner Electric is a quasi, you know, public operation. Right. So my guess is if they're putting in, you know, millions of dollars into the infrastructure at this location, they probably will be the tenants, and they're the property owners, I believe, too, of that parcel. So, but it's possible, right. You know. I mean, if you added a McDonald's there or something, of course, yeah, there's going to be a lot more trips. But
call center.
What we generally do when that happens is we evaluate that particular proposal when it comes in. They have to provide the mitigation. So there are all kinds of potentials, but we try to, you know, deal with what we have for the time being.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Clarifying question. I thought I heard Mark say that this is vested, but only for phase one. But yet this agreement is for all three phases.
Correct.
So all three phases are being vested by this agreement.
So not the design. I don't, if they don't have, and Lynn can maybe, or Dave can speak to this, but if they don't have a building permit application for phases two or three, then they're not vested to that. This is only, this development agreement is only for the improvements along North Bend Way.
That's a good question, though. But the improvements along North Bend Way and Southeast 140th are both triggered because it's all one parcel. If it were split into two parcels, which is how they, since it's so long and skinny, it's odd that it's all one parcel. So since there's substantial improvement happening on it, it triggers all frontage improvements, but they're only improving the northern. So they're vested for the building, for the setbacks, for the frontage today. But because they're not improving the southern side, that's where the city thinks it's a reasonable route to go to have them do the frontage improvements there when they are improving the southern side.
And on page 414, paragraph 8. And this is positive. I'm not part of the negative. I think it's probably going to be vested fully. So for the term that it's going to take to build it, but it appears that it is vested for the whole phase.
Well, you know, it's impossible to vest something that hasn't been shown to you. So that is on the plan and the improvement requirements and the provisions of the development agreement will remain in place for the life of the project. But the vesting for the particular on-site improvements is only granted when they receive their approvals and their building permit for that portion of it. So you're right in that they're vested for what they've shown and what they're building. And the question came up earlier, if the standards change in the future, are they subject to those? Yes. If they were vested with respect to everything in the future, we couldn't change them. So that portion of the site that's there and the improvements that they agree to put in now, those are vested.
But the permit allows them, or the development agreement allows them to proceed phases three at their own
timescale. They have to present the plan for that and get the plan approved before it can be vested.
The benefit is available until we get fully vested.
Well, certainly, you know, it would take if they came in with a plan that was consistent with the phasing and worked with everything, and we for some reason didn't want to approve it and didn't claim it was vested. I think that's highly unlikely because when they come in and they show what their phasing is, we don't grant the ability to phase it unless we know it'll work and we know that the future phases will be coordinated with it. But we don't have, you know, the full plans in our office showing what's going to be built for the future.
Those contingencies don't appear here in writing, so do they know what you just said?
Legally, you're vested according to our code, and that all is in writing. It explains how vesting occurs. Unless we had a provision here and said they are vested for all future stages or any on-site construction that will occur, then they're only vesting that which they presented to us. It's impossible to vest something they haven't seen because we really don't know what the rest of the project is going to be, and they may have some flexibility in how they'll approach it in the future, and it might be different than what they think of today. So,
and permits are what's vested. Right?
Yeah.
Development agreement stands on its own.
Stands on its own, unless it has, a development agreement is basically a contract. And if in that contract they were requesting and showed in their plan the future buildings and all the improvements, and they were requesting that they get a site plan approval now and that be vested, then that would be included. But since they want flexibility in the future, we're leaving that open.
So may I suggest that the city, in the language that says something we just said, that if it doesn't say anything like that, it's all understood. Well, that
sure.
You and I are going to be very by that. And this understand that this agreement, mm-hmm. probably should have something there that says you agree to that.
Right. I think what we presume, this question came up earlier in our attorney meeting yesterday, asking about if we have ordinance requirements or ordinance provisions that we don't mention in the approval, are they still applicable? And yes, they are. It's the responsibility of the professionals at work, whether it's a registered engineer or an architect or a contractor, to know what the laws of the city are. We don't mention everything in terms of health and safety and state laws and all of that in the agreements. Those things that are part of our laws of the city and our code always apply, and they're always responsible for it. But if you feel clarifying that issue in there is important.
In my experience, they usually have a declared statement that just ties it up and talks with the attorneys to say, okay, this
sure.
I just had another general question that I thought of when Dick was mentioning that. There's no, there wouldn't be any breach of agreement or anything if they didn't do a phase two or three. I don't have any reason to think that, but they could essentially get around the frontage requirements by saying they were going to do phase two and three, but then don't.
That's in here that that we have ability to, the city has ability then to go after them, right?
Yeah,
because that's the whole point of the development agreement is to allow them to do it in phases and delay those improvements. If they came in today with all the permits, they would just go ahead and make all the improvements as every builder would need to do, right?
That's the benefit of it.
And so this agreement is to hold them accountable that in the future they will do it.
Is there somewhere in here, I guess, that says if they don't do phase two and three, then something would happen?
I think there's breach of contract.
Yeah, there's a notice of default, opportunity to cure, and resolution on page 5. So I want to go back to page 2. And it's 9-1 or 9-I. It's talking about the improvements to Southeast 140th, and it says 2 11-foot travel lanes and a 5-foot bike lane, and then it goes and, but it doesn't say from where to where, and I know generally it's just your own frontage, so is that just understood, or
shown on on the engineering plans, so, but the intent is not to get that specific or detailed in the development agreement.
So they're not held to do 4 miles of roadway.
Oh, no.
Just their frontage.
Just make sure everybody's clear on it.
Yeah, and clarification as to the completion of the improvements, on page 3 of 14, right after the description of phase 3, it describes as of the date of this agreement, only phase 1 has been designed and scheduled. The expected build-out time period for the entire project is 10 years, with phase 1 expected to be completed by December 2018, phase 2 expected to be completed by December of 2022, and phase 3 by December of 2027. So there's a schedule laid out in here of performance. So the assumption in that performance is that they will stick to that schedule and they will build the improvements accordingly.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Commissioner Ryan.
I'm satisfied with the agreement. I just want to say that Tanner Electric is one of the better utilities in the region. I want to have it in our presence.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. I assume that's a well-informed opinion.
This is just a way of something public comment. You know, it's about the trees. It looks like it's a forest that's part of the north part of the property. So, you know, looking at what we have of a site plan here, and there's some trees.
Yeah, Yeah, so the, on the site, Exhibit B, site plan indicating phase one from two and three, that's mm-hmm. what you're looking at. So, Lynn, you were saying a 40-foot buffer where, it, and maybe one section has a 35-foot part, but how does that look to this drawing, or is it not shown?
Yeah, it's not shown on here, but as you're looking at the drawing, on the parking is part of the area that bumps into the 40-foot landscape, and the landscape area can be reduced actually to 20 depending on the use and the added landscaping provided. And since this is an admin building and not a heavy industrial, and it's the parking lot, so the last two stalls, I believe it is, bump into the 40, but otherwise the 40-foot landscape has integrity has remained, and there, those trees are remaining, and they're doing a lot of the replanting in that area. In addition, they were willing to work the sidewalk to meander it and actually provide an easement, because some of it goes onto their property, to make sure they could save the trees. So where they could go around significant trees, they did to save them. So we have worked really hard. We've heard that over and over from the community, and Tanner Electric has been willing to work with us to save as many as possible.
Was or is there a like earthen berm that also helps with noise and kind of shading of buildings?
There's not a berm on this property. It's pretty flat.
No, but to create one, a 5 or 8 foot.
Well, if you created a berm, you'd be disturbing the roots. You'd either be digging or bringing soil on top of the roots.
Well, where we're not saving the or retaining trees before the parking area, if you had a berm that would help buffer sound and shade the buildings from the street view.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's room out there. We'd have to look at if there was room to do that. I don't know off the top of my head if there is.
Yeah.
I'm thinking in 35 feet kind of an engineering if you took like 15 feet of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if sound's the issue, and what I heard was freeway sound and that the trees would mitigate a little there, I don't think you're going to do that with a berm. I think, you know, the trees have a little bit of an effect on sound, but and even there's been a lot of studies, particularly in the Bay Area, on sound walls, and what they tend to do is they tend to reflect sound, and it'll go 200 or so feet back and affect neighborhoods. And there's a big hue and cry now to eliminate them because of A, they're the sound passes on to somebody else. It doesn't hit the people right behind it, but it reflects on others. And people, it creates these corridors, and people are not happy with the visual effect. So they're not that effective. They're effective immediately if you're right behind them, but they really are a sound blaster to send sound back, and it affects other folks. And they've done a lot of sound readings to see what the effect of traffic is on neighborhoods, and it just hasn't worked out well.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you on the cement walls. I'm thinking, but earth, it would actually absorb in that case.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the sound you hear is a boom as they come falling down. We get a pretty strong wind coming down the middle forks, which has put these trees right in the midst of that wind path. So I'd be worried about losing trees on coming down in the southerly direction towards the parking lot and the cars in there.
Yeah. Any other thoughts or comments?
With my experience with the berms, it can be difficult. We get a lot of rain here, but it puts those plantings like that much further away from the water table, so it can be hard to establish plants here. If you put them 5 feet up from the water table, you might have to irrigate, which isn't a great thing. It's not ideal.
Not if they're native.
Yeah, you shouldn't have to, but if you put them up higher, you're giving them a disadvantage.
Ready for the question, or you guys want to think it over some more?
So all of our concerns that we just went through are going to come up, I don't want to say appropriately, but technically they're going to come up in the permit process. So this agreement is just almost like a letter of intent.
All it relates to isn't the site plan or the design. It relates to the ability to allow them to phase improvements. Yeah. That's the intent.
And I think this project already went through State mm-hmm. Environmental Policy Act, so their vested application, I believe this was already noticed to the community.
Right.
So they're pretty close to obtaining a building permit for this administration building.
I move we move it along.
So Commissioner Lucky is making a motion to approve the development agreement for Tanner Electric headquarters. And a second by Commissioner Ryan. Any further discussion or question? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. It's unanimous. Next item on the agenda is the public hearing on North Bend Municipal Code 19.05 amendments, new street standards for Park Street.
This is clarification. This was not noticed as a public hearing, so it's not actually a public hearing.
Okay.
So it's just discussion.
Wonderful. Who would like to give us any introduction?
Yes.
Park
Street. Yeah, thanks. Mike Sippo is going to start. We'll okay. both talk about it, but he has provided some additional handouts for you all that he'll be speaking to right now. Thanks for coming, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Thank you again. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'm ready. Thank you for the maps that you're handing out and the proposed Park Street sections. That's very accommodating. So I actually went to those streets and I made notes of the businesses that were at the intersection so I could help orientate myself.
All right.
Okay. Mr. Sippo.
So a few things are happening here along Park Street. We've had a couple of recent, one commercial and also one multifamily proposal come in along Park Street. And so we started taking a look at Park Street and the sections in addition to our level of service study, which our Public Works Director will speak to a little bit later. So, what we found in our level of service study was that the intersection of Bendigo and Park Street within the next 10 to 20 years is going to fail, especially for the left turn. If you've already been out there for a left turn, you can see it can get pretty hairy.
Mike, you're saying a left turn from Park
from
to
from Park on the 202.
Itself, yeah. And this is a result of a lot of the traffic learning to bypass North Bend Way and the Bendigo-North Bend Way intersection. And, you know, as that intersection continues to erode, more and more people are going to start using Park Street. So we started thinking of ways to, okay, how can we improve Park Street to not only help with the flow of traffic to make that left turn, but also to work with the businesses along the, you know, between Park and Cedar, Bendigo and Cedar, and then also the residences from Cedar to North Bend Way. And, you know, also in addition to that, we were building a roundabout that possibly, or probably this summer at Park Street and North Bend Way. So that will even help create funneling movements onto Park Street. So that's a little bit of the history as to, you know, why we've taken a look at it, and we're going to see a lot of increased traffic volumes.
Mm-hmm. My turn?
Yeah.
All right. So when we started to think about, we knew that we needed to change the amendments in our code for Park Street because right now it's shown as a collector, and with the higher traffic that Mike was talking about, we're going to start seeing more people using that route. But it's also in our downtown. It's zoned downtown commercial on either sides. We see it also as being a pedestrian. We would like to see more pedestrian foot traffic out there. We also envision bikes out there. So really it's more of a complete street sort of look that we wanted to give Park Street. So we did. So staff got together and looked at Park Street. So here you have the turn that Mike was talking about. And then we have our future roundabout down here. And what we found is we couldn't find one street section that fit the street in entirety. Also because of the built environment, there's already buildings built right up to here. So even if we put something in our code that we're going to have a 15-foot sidewalk there, it's not going to happen for a long time because there's a building there. So we wanted something that is implementable right now as growth starts to happen, but also addresses the three users that we're going to have there. So we split this up, the first one being Bendigo to Main Street. It's a heavy commercial area. We see a lot of traffic here, commercial on both sides. We know we need the 12-foot left turn lane, so that's why you'll see that there is two 11-foot turn lanes, two 11-foot through lanes, a 12-foot turn lane, but we also wanted the foot traffic to be accounted for here, so we had a wider sidewalk here, and I don't have it right in front of me. So 13 on this side, and then 6.5 feet on the north side, because that's what's already built there. These improvements were just done, and there's this building right up here, so we left that as it is, because right here there's also a sidewalk that goes on, so it's already wider because it goes back a little ways. What is missing here, and we'll explain why, are bike lanes, and the bike lanes are not there because we needed the turn lane. The reason we ended up not having bike lanes, we figured that, so we have them the rest of the way, and if bikers are going north, we figured they would want to turn onto Main anyways and not come out here to turn right. If they're going left, we're going to have a route going through here for them to get, for the family, for the maybe less comfortable riders. We don't want them turning left onto this main intersection. For comfortable road riders, they're going to either be turning left or right anyway, so they're going to merge with traffic. They're not going through. So we don't have a bike lane there, but you'll see we have it the rest of the way. Then as we come further along here, the next section that you'll look at is Park to Cedar, or even maybe Healy right here now that we're looking at it. To Cedar. So again, we still have the two 11-foot through lanes. We have a 12-foot turn lane still because we have these main intersections where people will be, we don't want queuing traffic, so we kept the turn lane so traffic will be able to make their turns. We have a bike lane here, and, there's one thing that I forgot. And then we also have the 8-foot sidewalks on both sides. Since there wasn't existing ones, we were able to get a little more sidewalk. What we don't have here that we have here is a 7.5-foot parking lane. This is a balancing of all the different needs and competing interests on the street, and I think we came to a good solution. But so we'll have a parking lane here. There's not parking on either side here. We also went out and looked at who's parking where. We looked at during the day and during the night and where there was people parking. The majority of the people are actually down here in the residential. So as we move to our next section, there's not as many turn lanes. There's not as many main roads. There's just private drives, so we don't see that queuing is going to be an issue. And
you might add, with the commercial project that's going in, the new one,
yeah,
we're adding public parking.
Right.
As a part of that,
right,
to kind of mitigate.
Right, that's a good point. So we hear parking's an issue. And so we were hesitant to take away. We didn't want to take away all the parking on Park Street. We know that. But we also don't want to put it right on a busy corner here. So we're working with this commercial development that's happening here. This is all city-owned right here. And what we're doing is having them extend their parking lot out and adding more stalls than they actually would need to do. And they are... For that, they can use some of them for their, there'll be a joint use agreement. Some of them can be used for their commercial and then some as public parking as well. Once we get back here, we get into residential. This is heavily residential. This is where we have new townhome projects coming along in here. So I made it look bigger than it actually was. It's about 5 parcels right here. And so what we're seeing is residential growth here. We'll just leave it down. It's not working. we don't have the turn lanes. We still have the bike lanes, two 11-foot travel lanes. And then here on either side, we do have a 7.5-foot parking lane. And then the sidewalks are still at 8 feet. So this is staff working together to figure out what's our existing conditions, what's actually out there and not just in a dream world, what's coming, what do we want to see out here. And so because of that, you actually end up with 3 different sections for a not a really large street, but a very important one with 3 important users on it.
Lynn, thank you for going over that so wonderfully and explaining that in detail, because it's much clearer now than what was on the paper. One thing I'm not sure if I got, did you say something about Healy and Park?
Well, so Main to, right now on the code it says Main to Cedar, but Mike and I were talking, we think it actually might make sense to go Main to Healy. And Mark and David, I'll have you guys all chime in on that.
The reason why I ask about Healy,
yeah,
because if you go to the Festival of Mount Si, then that is the street that gets used really heavily. And so if we're going to think about how to flow for that festival, then it would make sense to have the improvement out to Park back to I-90 and, you know, j-
just have a good flow of traffic.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I think this is a main enough road that we'll probably look at in making sure there's a turn lane to get onto that as well. Mr. Ryan?
Hey, what would your best argument against having a four-way on Main and Park?
That's a good question. We did talk about that, having a four-way stop here.
Yeah.
And I'll off the cuff, and then anyone else can jump in more. This is a through. We see a lot of through traffic here. There's a light here. We don't want people to be queuing up back here, and that's what we're using as one of our through roads around town.
It's certainly a possibility for the city to take that step. I think the trip generate the traffic or the amount of vehicles that use Park compared to Main is probably just a ballpark guess, 5 to 1, 4 to 1, maybe 6 to 1.
You're stuck on that. You feel like it's 10 to 1.
Yeah.
You just can't get on the Park.
Yeah.
You do like two cars back. It seems like you're waiting forever to where you start taking risks. Mm-hmm. What bothers me about this town.
Yeah.
That it can't recognize the fact that people take risks getting out of the street because of this throughway policy.
You know, one thing that might happen to help with that, Vic, is when the roundabout goes in, because the ability to get through the intersection at Park and North Bend Way and then come up to make the left turn off of here at Healy, if you're going to the park, it might be a little easier to get across the street by using a roundabout and coming back here and taking a turn. Right now, the reason you have this is because you have too many competing movements at one place. And the one nice thing about a roundabout is that there is very little delay involved, and you're able to safely get around and get on the street. So that'll help a little bit. It's not directly relating to your issue, but if you took the roundabout and came back, you're able to avoid that.
So you're making that a right turn only
then? No, we're not. We're also, but there's also turn pockets that we're adding. So we're removing some parking, and this is where the street's complicated. There's a lot of competing needs, but some of the parking's going to go away, but then you'll get the turn lanes, which should be helpful as well. But, I mean, that's a great suggestion that I think
there's no final engineers think there's about. No final decision on that.
If it lets you in, the turn lane is great, but if it lets you in...
Do we need a merge lane so it gives you a chance to get your speed up into the traffic? But it shouldn't be going that fast that it...
Yeah, there's no real need for acceleration.
They'll speed up to cut you off.
That's not a North Bend driver.
Frustrated driver there.
You need that, just one of those.
The diesel's loud enough.
Pop up on the top of your car.
and the biggest of them all, I guess it's going, is that coffee shop. That generates more traffic jams than anything else.
Yeah,
that
you're right.
That's not going to be there.
I think we're going to remedy that because there's a new building coming in where they're going to be incorporated in the building. And one of the big problems is those coffee places queue like mad. And we had Mike on our staff came up with a great site plan that takes care of that queuing effort and takes it off of Main. It's not queuing then off of Park. So you're going to have a lot better situation to get those cars out of the way.
And then are we going to lose parking on the Montessori on the corner there? Park. There's icy cars parked on that side.
This one right here?
Right. That impact when you're trying to turn around to get onto... it's a very challenging road. I see people pushing through the walkway, and then taking
Parking here,
is that going to be eliminated?
This is proposed to go away, but the parking along Main would stay.
Okay.
One thing for the parking, because I hear we've brought this up numerous times, is that Mark did add into our TIP, our Transportation Improvement Plan, a parking lot at some point. It's not designated. We don't have a parcel chosen, but we'll put money towards it because we hear that's a need.
You mentioned that this developer will take some of that land and put spots there. Why not make that a city parking garage?
We could entertain that motion.
Parking lots are fun.
Don't put the foundation
don't
in
there. Don't
me. Parking garages are very dear. I've built a number of them.
I noticed our first step before we start charging for on-street parking is 2-hour signs up. So, yeah.
About 15 years ago, City of Issaquah decided to build a parking garage, and there's probably 50 stalls or so, and that helped out downtown. So, on a small parcel.
One thing that I have looked at, just briefly, that it's not related to this proposal, is along Main Street, once we do have our striping along Park, like this, it does give us some opportunities to worked with some of the striping to perhaps put in turn pockets or refuge pockets. Of course, a four-way stop isn't off the table yet either. And like you said, anybody who's been at that intersection knows it can be scary at certain times of day. The idea is getting the cars out of the driveways quicker, because there's so many conflicting movements going on that if we can give cars more places to go, they're going to be out of your way. So there's a lot of creative opportunities that we can work with.
Does anybody have an off-the-cuff incident at Main Street Park?
Police would. But I don't know.
I've never seen anybody in an accident. How often it happens.
Never seen it.
Okay.
Lynn, you made reference to some wider sidewalks, including a scary 13 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Is there like a new trend or something to support that wide of a sidewalk?
Yeah. So actually, you have in your design standards for all of North Bend, we have two for our commercial areas. We have a pedestrian 1 street and a pedestrian 2. Pedestrian 1 being where we anticipate the highest generating uses, and it's up to 15 feet on it. And right now this is called out for, I believe this was a pedestrian, I don't remember if it was 1 or 2, but it was at 13 already. On where you think maybe there's a coffee shop here and people, chairs are spilling out onto it, people are spilling out onto it, it creates a gathering space. Do you
have anything to add to that, David? No, I think the reason that you widen the sidewalks, and one of the other things you look at is quite often you'll have building cutbacks at the corner so you can have outdoor plaza areas. What we want to do is encourage that kind of traffic. We've all talked a little bit about branding the city and having more visual activity so that people, when they come into town, there's a restaurant there, and they see that outdoor activity. And it really, really creates a much more lively streetscape, and that's what we're looking for.
Not directly related, but can I borrow your finger in the middle of your map at the cul-de-sac there? To the left or up is an assisted living senior housing facility. I think it's the only one we have.
I think there's another one on...
In town?
Red Oak.
Yeah, Red Oak.
This one's...
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, there's Red Oak.
Is that still in town?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That has always caught my attention because if my grandmother is going to be camping out somewhere, that'd be the place, location-wise, facility, separate conversation. But the activity there, the ability to get out in her hot red stroller, whatever, that's a place that I kind of want to make sure we're all thinking about. Because they're all getting older. Right.
Yeah, and we are. Yeah, we could talk more about some of the proposed improvements to that park and pedestrian wise, some ways.
Yeah,
I agree.
They got to turn into Ferrari when they start living there.
Is Ballarat ever going to connect? What is that? McClellan?
I doubt it with that railroad there.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the old
train tracks and
railroad, which is Tanner Trail now.
I believe the railroad director is talking about extending the tracks a couple hundred feet, so that basically, because there's two tracks that come in, so they can pull up and then get on the other tracks. Because right now, only can use it. Yeah, it's squished. Only one train can use it. So I don't think so. There's no talk about it that I've heard.
Cool,
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
It's interesting. We're just sort of talking about one street. It's hard to talk about one street without talking about all the other ones. And, thinking about, we drove to Sideview tonight, and so we always take a right off of Ballarat. And I thought I read somewhere that, one of the on Main and Park, that if that gets too backed up, that it would be a four-way temporarily while it's evaluated for a light. Was that a different intersection that I'm thinking of?
Yes, it's a different intersection. Okay. It's North Bend Way and Ballarat. So
it's
technically a four-way, but really it's a three. It comes out to North Bend Bar and Grill.
Right.
It's really only three movements that are heavily used.
But so thinking about my typical route, which is not uncommon for people to get across town to get to Sideview or that area, and you take a right on North Bend Way, and then you take a left, because taking a left out of Ballarat is a nightmare most times a day. But so that would probably be mitigated by the roundabout at... Downing,
That's what we're betting on. We're gonna have some add some signage that directs vehicles coming on Ballarat. If you want to go east, North Bend Way, take second, take third. Third is especially wide, and then make just one turning radius improvement at the Downing Third Avenue intersection. And Downing Avenue is completely underutilized. I mean, you see, other than the school traffic, you see one vehicle every 5 minutes on it.
Right. It'd be a good location for a two-lane roundabout.
The traffic engineers are telling me that based on our full build out at 14,600 people based on current zoning, and it's actually a little bit less than that, that there's no roundabouts in town that need to be two lanes.
So real quick, because you can't talk about one street without talking about every street, we do have to have a public hearing on this at a later date, so discussion will continue. So I would recommend that we just shift into our next agenda item.
Just real quick. I did have something that I was getting to.
Oh,
because with the redirection to Downing and that roundabout, the existing crosswalk there being offset from the main road, in my opinion, is quite dangerous. You get a lot of people turning onto a park, but you go 30 feet.
You're talking about this one right here?
No.
Oh, this one up here?
On Park.
Along Park?
With Ballard, or with North Bend Way. So keep going right there. So that bike crossing is set back from the roadway. People start accelerating and slam on the brakes as they see you crossing. I mean, I do it as I'm pulling in there. So I'm wondering if that's been thought about, how that crossing can be made safer with even more traffic coming through there.
Yeah, and we're going to start totally redoing that intersection. It'll be one of the city's biggest transportation projects we've done in years is to build that roundabout, and there'll be splitter islands that extend away from the roundabout, and each one of these splitter islands there will be crosswalks just like you see at the Cedar Falls Way roundabout. So it'll look so different you won't even recognize that old what's currently there.
Okay.
I know what you're talking about though. It's easy to just drive right across and not realize you're going across a crosswalk.
And it'll be lit up a lot more, too. There's some poor lighting in town. And so with each of these capital infrastructure projects, we'll be adding lighting so we can see the pedestrians at nighttime, too.
Mark, you made a reference that Downing was underutilized.
Yes.
And so I don't know if this is apparent to you, but I see people heading northeast, I guess, on Downing rather than south, because trying to go south and turn on North Bend Way is really difficult because you have the Park Street people always competing while you're trying to merge on.
Yeah.
And so I know a lot of people go back to whatever North Bend Bar and Grill, Ballarat.
So that's the beauty of the roundabout. It's going to create traffic calming, public safety. It'll allow everybody to merge in. So it's our number one transportation project, number one capital project the city has. It's pretty much a 99% go at this point. So
they don't merge. Yeah. They get a convoy going. You don't break in. You just don't break.
Bigger is better.
Dick likes the roundabout. Challenges him.
I've been here for 4 years, and I have not had one problem at Cedar Falls Way roundabout. It doesn't back up. So.
You're the big white diesel truck.
No.
It's a black.
Mike and Lynn, thank you very much. Appreciate that. So can we move on to item number
One more comment on the roundabout, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mark, I'm just saying this. I know there's total engineering planning, but most roundabouts that I've seen, including our I-90, that roundabout, if vegetation or the berm itself gets to the line of sight where you can't see through to the other side of the roundabout, that's a problem, particularly for people who haven't done one yet. Mm-hmm. So as we get into Park Street, pedestrian, vegetation, and whatever else, somehow keep that in mind.
Especially the smaller roundabouts, it's more of an issue. The bigger the roundabout it is, the less of an issue because the longer it takes to drive around. So,
So thank you.
Item number...
Observation. Looking at the specs on Park Street on page 1-3, you guys are somewhere in this about your arborist recommended only one type of tree be planted on public roads and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if I do that at all.
Not on public roads, but on this street, we looked for a recommendation. so you would have a continuous, the same species on that street.
And I suggested your drawing show the same trees.
Oh, yep, that's a drawing, yep.
You're clearly showing deciduous and conifer trees on your
hand. That's 140th. And the, and, but that's a good suggestion. I will work on my sketch species of trees. I've got somebody with a keen tree eye on here. I know.
If you have a species issue, you're going to lose all your trees as well.
True. You need to have variety, yeah.
Yeah.
This doesn't make sense. I'm not a culture in there.
Yeah. No, that's... Thank you.
Okay, item number 8, North Bend full build-out traffic impact analysis report. Mr. Wiegels?
Yeah, so apparently I was requested to come and present this to the Planning Commission, so here I am. I'll mostly just take Q&A. This was a study done by Pertee, one of our civil engineering consultants. They're very familiar with our city. It occurred throughout 2017. What they did is look at 12 key intersections in the city, the ones that are most used, so North Bend Way and Bendigo, 436th Avenue, and North Bend Way, 468th. So those are shown on table 2 of your packets on page 4, the top of page 4. That's one of the important tables of the 14-page report. Pertee has, they run traffic modeling at each of these intersections. They incorporated our 30 transportation capital projects, which are close to $60 or $70 million now around the city. So that city council approves that every June. And we also, our population's about 6,700, probably closing in on 7,000 by now. And our full build-out based on zoning is somewhere a little less than 14,700 people. We think we're going to grow at roughly 3.5% per year. There was not much growth, as you many of you know, that happened in the previous 10 years. The last couple years is starting to pick up. It's picking up even more now. So there's a concern at the council level of, hey, what's happened? We see more vehicles on the road. We know there's more homes going to be built. Is this going to be a problem for us or not? We don't want to turn into Issaquah or some of the other cities that got kind of behind their transportation projects or funding. One of the things we did a couple years ago is we raised our transportation impact fee for every single family home. So it's $10,700 per single family home. Somebody builds a home, you got to pay that. That goes into a pot that we use to build these transportation improvement projects. So that was run through this model here as well. Table 2 at the top of page 4 shows where we're currently at. So that's one of the important tables. LOS, that stands for level of service. If it's an A, B, C, or D, the intersection is meeting our code. And if you look at table 1, it shows you the delay time. And that delay time is based on the PM peak hour, which is in between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. on a weekday. So it's not at 8 in the morning. So the intersections, and probably you can relate, that are not passing our code are North Bend Way and Ballarat. So that's a LOS F, and that's shown in red. And then we have a couple E's, and those are North Bend Way and Bendigo, North Bend Way and Main, that's an E, and then North Bend Way and Park Street. So that's today. And then we put all these projects into the model, and then it spit up with, if you go all the way to the end, which is table 13 on page 14, it provides a level of service that is actually better in most cases than what's currently. We still have one failing intersection at North Bend Way and Main Avenue, and that's for that left turning movement, which is going to be challenging for somebody who wants to turn left on Main onto North Bend Way. At some point, the city could choose to say no left turns. So you got to either go straight or right turn only. But we kind of want to create that downtown plaza, which is more pedestrian friendly, and transport vehicles more on Park Street. We have a number of capital transportation projects that we're working on in conceptual and preliminary design right now that will really spread the vehicles around town. because what we don't want to do is have a freeway run right through the middle of town like some cities do. So some of the projects that we have are South Fork Avenue Extension. We're at conceptual design on that. So that basically builds a brand new road that goes right through Nintendo's Gate, and it goes all the way up to Northwest 8th Street. And that's an intersection with North Bend Way and Northwest 8th Street. Not much traffic there. We also have Northwest 8th Street improvements that could potentially happen. That's another transportation project we have. We have funding for a preliminary design on a roundabout on Bendigo Boulevard and 4th Street. And so that will route more vehicles right out here past the library and onto Ballarat Avenue. And then we're going to whisk those vehicles via signage to our new roundabout at Park Street. We also have the Pickett Avenue extension. So that moves more vehicles around in that neighborhood, so they're not kind of coming downtown. So it's just kind of spreading the pain, spreading the wealth, the vehicles all over the place. And so that's what we've done in our transportation improvement program. I felt really good after reading this. They did make some recommendations to add to our six-year TIP, and that's shown on pages 13 and 14. Those particular projects you're probably not familiar with. One of them Mike Sipo touched on earlier, which is a dedicated left turn lane, driving out of town from Park Street, turning onto Bendigo Boulevard. So that is one project that they recommended. Otherwise, the queues won't pass. We'll be at LOS ERF. Another project they recommended was, always stop potentially at North Bend Way and Ballarat Avenue. Another project was Cedar Falls Way in Maloney Grove Avenue. The nice thing about that is there's a ton of pavement out there, and the right-of-way is really wide. That could be a smaller traffic circle at that location. Another project is Southeast 136th Street and 436th Avenue Southeast, and that's for a roundabout. We are, City Council is considering this at Tuesday night to amend our transportation improvement program to add that roundabout into our TIP, and we're going to have the developer, that's the plan, build a roundabout at that location, because with the combination of the River Run apartment complex of 150 units and the Dahlgren 212-unit apartment complex, and just all the background noise and projects, and being that it's so close to the freeway and exit 32, it's going to be a real problem if we put our head in the sand and don't be proactive. So city's getting proactive on this one and saying you guys are going to build it.
Mark, looking at that table 13, looking at the North Bend Way on 40th Street, with a little service of A, there's going to be 500 homes back in there by the 2035. You know, back in the
Tanner Road, are you talking about?
Tanner Road.
Sigali.
140th, all that development going on the next 10 years, level service A is awfully low for what's coming ahead.
Well, the actual Sigali project and being built by Toll Brothers and Murray Franklin, it's 160 lots or so. There's an existing 30 lots back there. Some of those lots in that development are actually connected to Wood River neighborhood and also to Tannerwood. I think there's about 20 or 30 lots there. So not all of those trips are going to the dead end of Tanner Road. And 140th Street is even further east than where Tanner Road is. So most of those trips are going to be going back towards exit 32. So folks that are leaving the Sigali development, they're going to be turning right onto North Bend Way to get to the freeway or to get to downtown. So we're not seeing high traffic volumes out there at all right now.
No, I'm talking, this goes to 2035, I'm looking further out.
I'm still not that concerned about vehicles on that North Bend Way on the east side of town. There's just the ADT is low, average daily traffic is low. I would say it's probably in the order of a couple thousand vehicles per day right now. Even if you add several hundred homes, I'm not seeing problems out there, and that's why that LOSA is what it is. Just not that many.
But that old Tanner Mill site, 60 plus acres, that's destined to become either residential or industrial at some point. That's going to bring cars.
So in some of those parcels touch 136th Street, so that's where that new roundabout is off the exit 32, if we're talking about the same parcels.
We are, but I'm talking about the activity is going to be east of that roundabout, so they're going to have to go through it and still get out to it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't can't agree with the estimates here, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
This has been a pretty quiet neck of the woods back in the east part of town, but I think it's going to explode. And I think the city thinks it's going to explode, too. I don't see the level of service being established.
There just can't be that much growth that happens east of 468th Avenue because that's the edge of the growth urban growth area. So
not 468th, 436th. Between 468th and 436th.
On North Bend Way? Yeah, North Bend Way. It's pretty well constrained by the freeway and the rivers. There's just not that much property there, to be honest with you. It's going to just create, you know, traffic.
If I counted, if you said the Sigali is 156 and the Tanner Pit is 49,
yeah.
So that's under 300 homes, so it's not going to be...
Two cars per home.
Yeah. And probably two or three trips downtown and back a day.
Yeah, it's just not that big a we just don't have that big a population here.
Okay. One thing I didn't notice was any recommendation on speed changes. Did they not?
No, we did this. That was not part of the study. Although, as part of the Dahlgren project, we just talking about speeds. We are planning on lowering the speed limit from 50 miles an hour down to 40 miles per hour once they get 2/3 occupancy from 436th Avenue out to Southeast 140th Street. Especially because there's a Snoqualmie Valley Trail crosses at an acute angle, and we're going to fix that here in the next couple years. As we just feel like there's more density there. We don't need to have 50 miles per hour because then people are driving at 60.
So
and it's not safe.
62.
Did you get pulled over to?
I'm not saying anything about that.
So one of the great things about
those weren't Christmas lights.
Was the projections of our growth and where we're building out in our areas and what you expect in the trips. I remember back to the Warrior Dash, and I don't know if it's still popular, but I know we do have an events coordinator, right, with our city?
We do.
So I expect we'll be having some big festivals of those sort. And so that was just the nightmare that backed up on I-90 on Exit 31 and, you know, was I don't know how many thousands of people in one or two days that descended on the city. So you have to do the best scenarios that you can, but there's also other cities, like take Puyallup, and they have the state fair, right? So how are they, you know, poised to handle such volumes of traffic but still not overburden the city with those kinds of, costs? How can we set ourselves up in this traffic planning and analysis to accommodate our festivals and our events so that we're in the same similar situation, that we have a good flow of traffic to, one, get to restaurants and parking areas, and then, two, into the freeway, you know. I guess that's the one thing I didn't hear talked about in this at all.
Well, it's a balancing act, so you don't want to pave the whole valley. And so you got travel lanes everywhere.
There is the opportunity, and Mark's group does this a lot, of particular traffic controls during certain hours that will change the flow of traffic if you need more lanes or you need to cone off areas or direct traffic in a certain way or keep it out of areas so they don't go into neighborhoods. And he has the ability to do traffic control measures and do things that temporarily reroute traffic. And that's generally how people deal with it.
And if we had the Nintendo bypass, what you're talking about, that would have, you know, been a big relief valve, too.
Huge relief valve, yeah, to get people, you know, to the freeway or to the casino. But
then
back
you could
and
also
forth.
Do one way in, one way out, mm-hmm. you know, during times of
sure.
event. Yeah.
What's the argument against having one-way roads? Cedar Falls and North Bend Way, making those one-way systems.
We haven't looked at that at all since I've been here.
Non-starter.
It's just never been really considered as a need or a desire or a want.
I've said it probably a dozen times in this commission.
I worked in Redmond when they did that as public works director, and it was tremendously unpopular. And as you know, they've gotten rid of them and.
a couple other cities I've worked in, they've tried them. In terms of moving traffic, it moves traffic. But what it doesn't do, particularly where you have traffic problems, it's usually where you have commercial. And people want access from both sides, and the merchants go crazy. And that local access, you always have a push-pull between getting from here to there and using routes that sometimes are should be more local-serving. And so what you try to do is to look at those routes that get you to the freeway and places where you can get through and give people viable options that are quick. And then those areas that are in commercial areas, you want access to be the main issue. Getting to the stores and, you know, getting to the destinations along the way rather than getting through the area. But it can be a very controversial issue. It depends on where you're suggesting them. But I know that in two cities I worked in, we went with it because we thought the traffic flow would be better. And it hurt a lot of businesses, and people just didn't adjust well to it. And we ended up having to turn it back into two-way. It works great in a very dense downtown area, but it's really hard to do it in a suburban community. People want to have access both ways through the community. It's sort of a behavior thing, I think.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Two questions about the Nintendo extension. One, I remember at some point hearing and understanding that there's a window of time that needs to be developed with that. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, yeah.
Okay. And so does this plan meet that window?
So I believe that expires in a year or two, but I've had conversations with their one of their vice presidents about, you know, hey, we're willing to extend this. Okay. It's all in the floodplain and floodway anyway. Last year, the city of North Bend, we applied for a grant from Floodplains by Design and also from King County Flood Control District. It was a $15 million project to build that road. And it was a road on top of a levee, and it had all the bells and whistles in this project in terms of flood mitigation for the whole valley. So there was a lot of ponded areas and woody debris and overflow channels, etc. We were unsuccessful at getting the grant. We were successful at getting some other grants, such as the Park Street Roundabout. But we're thinking about moving forward now without having all the bells and whistles and just getting a road in there at this point. And so,
is that necessary in order to build the road?
No, we can build. I mean, as one of these maps here shows where the floodplains and floodways are, and probably, as you know, West North Bend is all in the floodplain or floodway. So we can build new roads. We just have to be, you know, cognizant of where the crossings are and the floodway channels. So in that particular case, we may or may not raise it, but at the end of the day, if a road floods in the 100-year event, it floods. So we do require, you know, compensatory storage. So if we fill to build a road, then we have to excavate an equal or greater amount at that same elevation so it doesn't cause damage to nearby properties. So
it really adds to the cost.
Yeah. You know. And if it's in a floodway area, then we have to armor any banks, side slopes, because a floodway, that's where the flows are going faster than 3 feet per second. And it's at that velocity where the river can literally pick up homes and send them, you know, over the falls. Whereas the floodplain is more of, it's a little higher in elevation. It's more backwater where water just can't move fast enough. So that project is almost entirely in the floodplain, not in the floodway,
right,
which is good news. It's more of, right now, I'm not sure where we're going to reconnect with North Bend Way, if we connect to Northwest 8th Street, or if we cut over and make a new crossing of, over the train tracks and have a new intersection of North Bend Way. So,
which kind of gets to the second question that I had, and it seemed to be like that the extension of that would probably be most efficient, and now we're getting outside of our city boundaries, or at least growth management
area.
That's
still in our city boundaries, that area.
Well, what I would call Stone Quarry Road.
Uh-huh. That's right at the edge of the city limits, yeah.
Right. So would there be any coordination with the city of Snow Farming? Because that road isn't necessarily built for the amount of traffic that this would then pull on it.
So we've looked at doing improvements on Northwest 8th Street.
Yeah.
So that pulls in traffic from Bendigo Boulevard and also Bulch Avenue.
Okay.
So out towards kind of old downtown Snoqualmie. We have not looked at any improvements on Stone Quarry Road. I know it's pretty low and a lot of wetlands in the area,
yeah,
and it could be quite expensive to make
widening or walkway.
Isn't that with Snoqualmie anyway?
I think there's actually it's unincorporated King County for a little while, and then it becomes City of Snoqualmie right around the train museum. So there's a little gap there.
Well, so just thinking that could work really well to divert traffic around downtown, therefore freeing up these other intersections, North End Way and Bendigo, with that kind of through traffic.
That's what we really want to look at. Because, it's not, you could solve a lot of this by creating 6 travel lanes right through State Route 202, but do you want your downtown, just all those buildings coming down and having a highway right through there? I don't think anybody wants that.
Right.
And you'd have to widen the bridges. So instead, we're just going to kind of spread some of the vehicles to use other streets.
Yeah, which is certainly what I'm getting at.
Yeah. The other thing that's nice about North Bend, somewhat unique compared to a lot of cities, is other than I-90 is definitely a through, lots of traffic on I-90, but we're not a city on the way to get somewhere else. So cities like Issaquah and Redmond, there's a lot of through traffic through those cities that are people coming from South King County to get up to I-90 and so forth. We have mountains north and south of us, and they're not going to be built. So the trips, the vehicles that we have are us, the people that live or work here. And then some of the tourists in the summer, we do see the trips definitely pick up in the summertime. But our consultant did, one of you asked about weekends functions, and our critical path is still that weekday PM peak. It's still higher traffic volumes by quite a bit than the weekends. I think Puyallup Fair, they might have 30, 40, 50,000 people per day at the Puyallup Fair. I think some of the events we have 10, 15 years ago may have been on the order of maybe 5,000 people or 7,000, 8,000 people. So it's definitely impacts downtown. Or when we saw I-90 neck down to one or two lanes, that really affected us on Friday afternoons, because then they were using Waze applications, et cetera, to compete with us, because that was the fastest way through town. So the mayor and I have had some conversations with WashDOT and how that can be done a little bit differently. Anyways, I'm getting off topic.
I could rant on that for a while. Lynn, I'm guessing you're going to be the best to answer this question. In our last comprehensive plan amendment in the land use segment, we had a population estimate of maybe 11 or 12,000 people. And so in this document, it references 14,000. Is there something you can tell me that what is contributing to that increase of 2,000 people?
I think it was actually higher than that.
Were we 16?
It's gone down a little bit because of the rezone for the CLDR. I think we were almost 16.
It actually was higher, and it went down with the rezones, and we're, we're getting close to the buildable lands requirement to go through all that again. And as a matter of fact, the city council is at the retreat is going to do a little bit of visioning with regard to the land use planning and what we should be doing, what we could be doing. And some of the options that we're giving to them show perhaps employment concentrations in different areas so that we're not just sending people to the same place. So
makes sense.
One final question.
Yes, go ahead.
Didn't see it anywhere in here, which was somewhat relieving. With all of this other stuff going on, I'm wondering where the Pickett extension is falling on the priority list.
So we had Pulte extend the road to the north. A lot of people. Oh, okay. So a lot of people are like, why'd they do that? Well, it's in our comp plan, our transportation element. So I've met with one of the property owner. There's one private property in the way of making that connection, and he says he's open to it. So whenever the city wants to approach him with an offer for fair market value, he told me he's willing to sell that portion of the property. But then again, the road condition is in terrible shape to the north towards 6th or 8th Street. So once the city acquires that property, not only do we have to make that connection for 100 feet, we have to improve that road for safe pedestrian passage another 600 feet. I think it's in our top 10 of our TIP projects right now, which means that project could be done. I wouldn't be surprised to see that be done in the next 4 or 5 years.
Correct me if I'm wrong, all of the level of service projections assumed that connection was made.
Correct, yeah.
So that was an assumption for this.
That is an assumption, yeah. But there'll be lots of notification. We probably have a neighborhood meeting, an open house. We haven't even conceptually designed this or surveyed this yet or talked to any of the neighborhoods, but we know it's out there. We know it will take vehicles away from downtown. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, yeah, just kind of time frame.
Yeah, 4 or 5 years maybe.
So, Mark, you were talking about the roundabout North Bend Way and Park Street and funneling traffic through town. Do you have a decision between 3rd Street and 4th Street yet, or are they both kind of up still?
So we're definitely with the roundabout at Bendigo and 4th Street. That's going to put, and we would have rechannelization. So approaching that roundabout, there's a trailer park on one side and a couple homes. We would widen it so there'd be two travel lanes that parallel the wastewater treatment plant. So one lane continues around the tight bend towards downtown, and then there's a lane that approaches the roundabout so that we have more vehicles use 4th Street, and then they would come to a three-way stop with Ballarat. And then we would have signage once they take a right to probably travel down 3rd Street is my thought, because it's a little bit wider and there's wider pavement and there's only residents on one side. And then at that location at the intersection of Downing, there would be a right turn, and then you'd have this large roundabout, Park Street roundabout, straight ahead. So there would be more traffic, more vehicles going down 3rd Street, Downing, and Park Street. And then, of course, if you're traveling southbound on Ballarat and you look ahead and you don't see any vehicles at North Bend Way queued up for your left turn, say, hey, maybe I'll just go straight ahead here and just, see if I can get a left turn at this location. Or if that becomes too bad in 5 or 10 or 15 years, we can always create a four-way stop or a three-way stop at that intersection. So
I guess what I'm thinking is, does it then make sense to think about where the roundabout's going to go and the traffic on 3rd Street and how 3rd Street should be designed and how it's going to intersect with Downing and plan the pedestrian and bike and parking and things along that route as well as what you're thinking about as Park Street?
Maybe probably phase two. Right now we're a little short on dough. The Park Street roundabout project's going to be on the order of $2 million. We've got about $1 million in grant funds coming in. We're the transportation impact fees aren't coming in quite as fast as we had projected 2 years ago, meaning there's actually some delays in the amount of homes. We thought there would be more homes being built than there are, but they're kind of getting caught up in some of the weather and challenges of building in North Bend, just with the high groundwater table. A lot of the engineers and developers haven't been here before, so they don't know how much of a challenge that is to infiltrate their stormwater. And we're so flat, and that makes it a challenge, because on a site with more topography from high to low, there's a place to hold that water in a pond and release it. So anyways, I won't go into the details of that, but some of these projects are taking longer than...
Well, that's great if you've gotten over half in grant money.
Yeah, that was it.
Thank you as a taxpayer.
Sure. Mark, what's the impact of the trailers, double-wide trucks coming through all these roundabouts?
So the roundabouts that we're designing are the same size as a Cedar Falls Way roundabout. So if they're a very large trailer or even a large truck, we have a rolled curb, 4-inch tall, not even a 6-inch tall apron, so that they can make that radius and drive over. So I would say no impact.
Good. Are lanes wide enough for these trucks?
Some of our lanes downtown North Bend Way are quite wide. You may have noticed they're 14 feet. A typical travel lane is 11 feet wide. Unless it's a residential low-impact development street, I'm not going to approve anything less than 11 feet. Some of our center turn lanes are 12 feet wide. A large truck can be easily 10 feet wide or so. So again, these roundabouts will be very large. Our arterials are truck friendly. 436th Avenue,
coming off the freeway will continue to be truck friendly with the roundabouts. North Bend Way will continue to be truck friendly, except possibly, I know there is some concern about large trucks driving in downtown North Bend Way from Bendigo to Park Street,
yeah.
But Park Street will be truck friendly. So,
even though the signs aren't friendly to trucks,
that's the no park. That's the parking signs, not the driving signs.
On page 6, the last paragraph there is to determine the impact of this median of the operation of the intersection, 100 U-turn movements were added to the 2035 scenarios. And I was just wondering, is this Pertit's model, or do we supply them data? How did we?
No, we don't have the modeling software, nor are any of the civil engineers that work in public works. And there's 4 or 5 of us have the modeling or the experience doing this.
So they
this.
Put that in.
Yeah.
Well, but it was based off of observation. So it was based off of vehicles they observed trying to turn left that would no longer be able to. Or yeah, so that would have to go do the U-turn.
Yeah, one of the...
Seemed low. That's what I was thinking.
One of the changes coming between the existing Cedar Falls Way roundabout and the new Park Street roundabout is a center median there. So there's a big benefit in public safety, so you're not, vehicles have to, coming out of QFC, they have to take a right. They can no longer take a left once this is done. But, you know, the delay is a one block to the roundabout. It's going to be faster than stuff queuing back into QFC, so.
If there's anything I can do to help get that done soon, let me know.
Yeah, me too. I was hoping to do that project. You know, 2017 or 2016, we just were unsuccessful at getting the grants. And these projects are a lot of money, these transportation capital projects. And the cost of concrete's gone up a lot the last couple of years. Huge demand for construction right now. Seattle leads the world in cranes per capita or some such thing. That's been that way for 3 or 4 years. So, and unfortunately, in these public projects, we have to pay a prevailing wage. So that is the median wage as the worker in Seattle. So it's not a lot of the private developments, you know, John Day Homes, etc. They can build these frontage improvements for cheaper than the city can, even though we do the low bid process because of the required prevailing wage. So
yeah, we found in the past that prevailing wages can bump you up 25-30% in a heartbeat.
Yeah, that's true. So
this is not on the agenda.
Okay.
But I want to make an observation, maybe you have the same, where if you had concerns about the brightness of the crossing walks down there by Main and North Bend Way at night. My experience is it's very dangerous.
So we have temporary lighting on that intersection right now. There's a generator. Because as part of that project, we have 2 street lights that are 35 feet tall. So we have the PED lights that are lighted up, and they're only 15-foot tall globe lights. But Puget Sound Energy has just been really backed up the last year or so on projects. They haven't staffed up enough to handle all the construction happening in King County, Pierce County, Snohomish County. The other cities are feeling it because I talked to them. And so there'll be 2 street lights, so it should be lit up like Bendigo Boulevard and Park Street at that intersection. Well, there'll be kitty corner lights, and that temporary light will be out of there because it's almost too bright coming into it right now. So that's just a temporary condition we can see.
The traffic in my crosswalk experience is that I've been caught twice crossing, and they're just coming at me. They don't see the crosswalks. They're too dark on the street. I noticed that in Snoqualmie, their crosswalks are brighter. They're more of a brighter, brainy color for me, but they aren't bright white, but they're visible enough to the drivers because they're not seeing crosswalks. They're just seeing nothing if somebody crosses in the middle of it. So that makes me a target because no one can see that I'm supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if we're rethinking our design on that.
So, yeah, we've adjusted a little bit. We thought the brick crosswalks would stand out a little more than they did, and they're not. And so a couple days ago, we added crosswalk signs out there. So there's the fluorescent diamond MUTCD signage at those crosswalks. We've added 2 a couple days ago. We're adding 2 more on the light poles. Once Puget Sound Energy gets out here,
We also have buckets with the orange flags that can make a pedestrian feel more comfortable. We have, that's one of my concerns, when I came to the city 3 or 4 years ago, there weren't many people out at night in downtown. But now I'm seeing a little more activity at night in downtown. And so that means pedestrians, it means foot traffic. It means we need to do a better job of lighting these intersections, providing crosswalk signage, et cetera. So I've talked to Mayor Ken about this in the last few weeks, and that's going to be one of our big agendas this year and next year, is to really improve pedestrian safety downtown. It's just a lot of old infrastructure without lighting, whether it's Ballarat to North Bend Way. There's no street lights there. All you have is the ambient overflow lighting from North Bend Bar and Grill and from the dealership to the left. There's no lights. Sydney Avenue, North Bend Way. Again, there's one offset street light there. It's just a lot of old infrastructure.
The range of costs you have for that kind of crossing department, where does putting lights in the sidewalk rate?
You mean lights in the crosswalk?
The crosswalk.
Yeah, I mean, we can. It's more expensive to do that, but of course, you know, what we're also seeing is vehicle speeds are slower now with the improvement project after it's done. You see vehicles traveling at 20 to 25 miles per hour. They're not traveling at 25 to 35. We can retrofit that. It is expensive. They do get torn up by snow plows, et cetera. I-90, WashDOT's done several up at the pass. You've probably seen some of the lights for that.
But this area is supposed to be a showcase of the city. It seems that we should be willing to put money into that to make it a showcase. The entire four-block area there is supposed mm-hmm. to be a mecca for our little community. Mm-hmm. We haven't gotten there yet, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, we're adjusting. I think there's going to be some more improvements for pedestrians, whether it's signage. I mean, there was some thought, too, of we don't want to clutter it up, but the pendulum swung too far in one direction. At the end of the day, I'm as concerned about public safety as anybody. It's up to me, and if I see something that's unsafe, I'm going to say, hey, guys, we need to fix this, and so we're fixing that with signage out there and better lighting. So,
Mark, is there a manual or something that has, like, a code for lighted crosswalks be, like, put in for a certain speed limit road or anything like that, or if there is a general use of them?
You know, you can provide rapid flashing beacons, so those lights that flash, you can either have those, you know, powered from solar, or you can have push activated, so they can be going all day, you know, or they can be just push activated. So along this whole corridor from basically Park Street, North Bend Way down to Sydney, this downtown is, as we've started already to inventory these things, and I know it needs work.
Well,
so.
There's one that's by the roundabout North Bend Way. So, yeah just we did it. I didn't know how that came about and what the reasoning behind it was versus all the other ones that we just did.
Yeah, and they run about $15,000 or so. They're not cheap for the lights and so forth, the electricity. And so you have curb out, bump out sometimes, and so, and they've got to be ADA friendly as well. So,
we brought this up at the last meeting a little bit too, and I think the comment was by Les Schwab. There is a crosswalk where you push a button and then it lights up. And the problem, and hopefully when we do the roundabout at Park and Downing, that'll be changed because that's the one that just flashes all the time, and that's the worst. Because people become complacent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I mean, I don't want gaudy stuff. Public safety is critical, and like I was coming here today, and it's dark and it was rainy, and it was right when I made a right on Main off North Bend Way, and there were people that were crossing. Unfortunately, they had the flags and stuff, and I wasn't going straight anyway. But honestly, I would have probably had a challenge, seeing them. I would have seen them in time, but it would have been a little close, just because it could be just because of the lighting. In general, the ambient lighting, but then also having that one might be tough to have a flashing light at. Mm-hmm. But I think those, where we can fit them in, we just have to. It's not an option. It doesn't matter how much it costs.
Yeah.
I think incrementally, if you get your street lights placed like they need to be, and maybe have some pedestrian level lights as well.
Yeah.
The main thing is it's just too dark.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
And you do this sort of in layers. You add the lighting that's necessary to create it,
the safety condition. If you still have issues, then you move to the next level. Mm-hmm. You look at pedestrian level lighting. If that doesn't do it, then you look at the lighted crosswalks. But, you know, there's been over $2 million invested in the recent downtown improvements. It's made a difference. And I think the good part of that is it's a lot more pleasant to walk through it. Bad part is there are a lot more people walking. So your safety issues become bigger. And I've heard Mark talk time and time again about really working hard on getting street lights, particularly at the intersections, and looking at pedestrian level lighting. And I think there's a real awareness of that.
Yeah.
We're seeing it.
I think the one other thing we brought up was striping of the crosswalks. And I don't know the last time it's been done, but it's, you know, there's gaps where the cars mm-hmm. drive. So I don't know if you know roughly last time it was done.
And it was done two summers ago. And so, yeah, okay. We're due for that
so
one, too.
Yeah,
and the one at Park Street right now, I mean, so that one's going to be totally changed here. Mm-hmm. But you're right, there's a lot of the crosswalks that yeah. need to be restarted.
So it's like every 2 years, the car is just
yep.
eroded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now you can actually, if you have used certain kind of crosswalks, there's lots of different crosswalk types, is you can set them so that the wheelbase of most cars misses the the white thermoplastic, if you have crosswalks that look like a keyboard. Versus the crosswalks mm-hmm. we have in our city look like
the European
style.
Keyboard, yeah.
And so the ones with the bars, those ones get driven over at the same location. That's where you're seeing that wearing down. So.
Mark, where are we at with garbage cans downtown?
They've been ordered.
The project? Yeah, they've been ordered, yeah.
They actually custom make them once you order them. So the benches and the garbage cans have been ordered.
Awesome.
And
just Tom said, this week or next week or something like that, they're getting installed. Yeah, it's taken a while, so.
Yeah, just curious.
Any other questions on the traffic analysis?
Yeah, just a clarification on the Park Street
mm-hmm.
and Bendigo area. So just looking at the recommendations, they said to add a westbound left turn lane on Park Street.
Yes.
So that would be turning left from Park onto which is what we want. We want those bypasses. I use that route as well.
Right now there's only one lane, so there'd be two lanes.
So right now is it two lanes, just one in each direction?
Well, yeah,
correct.
Two, and there would be in the future it'd be three.
There'd be three. I think that's what you have here, like a 12-foot turn lane, but it's not dedicated left there.
Right. Correct. That's
so
correct.
Would you change that? You think you're planning here?
Yeah, the plan would be, I don't know if it would be a seeker but as you approach that, there would be a left turn lane, and then if somebody's coming eastbound, there would be a left turn lane going on to Main. So, like a switch.
Okay.
That probably wouldn't be a shared lane.
There'd be a dedicated, so as you're approaching Bendigo, you have two options. Option one is the dedicated left turn lane to get out towards the freeway, and the other option is to go straight. There's a small neighborhood there, or take a right.
Right.
Yeah.
But there'd be some sort of raised thing where they couldn't turn into that left lane if they were turning right coming out of the park.
Oh, like a median, like a C curb or something like that? C curb. Yeah, we would consider something like that, yeah.
The only other thing is on that, just with Hardware, and I don't have too many issues there, but I go into the Bartels, for example, and I make a right from Park Street and turn into Bartels, and then try to then make a left coming back eastbound. That is where it's pretty difficult. And I don't know if that would be any better or maybe even worse or impossible because the left turn
there might be a secret.
So you have to just make
And it's always, maybe I'm just kind of a geek, but when I'm planning my driving, sometimes I like, it's always the thing, I'll take a right, go right, much easier than left.
Okay,
so that's
on
just.
On that topic, I was kind of thinking about rights and thinking about Bendigo or 202 at that point, you're coming to where 4th Street is, where you said there would be a roundabout in there. Because right now, coming from that way, I've just given up on Ballarat, going around that way, making the left, and so I just go through the light, because it's actually not that bad overall, that field, mm-hmm. they go through. So now, I'm not sure if you'd be able to do all rights through there. Like, if I went through and went on and forth through that roundabout, then I could make another right, for example, on Ballarat, but then I'd have to make a left at some point if I did that.
But but there's not that much traffic at that point on Ballarat, so yeah, I think you're not going to have a wait there taking a left.
Or you could take 4th all the way down to Downing and go around the roundabout to the left.
And this study just looked at 12 intersections too, so it didn't. I mean, we've got a couple hundred intersections in the city, and there could be some that all of a sudden, you know, it's kind of that push pull. You fix one, and the next one becomes a problem. So it's. You know, it's a living beast.
Kind of whack-a-mole.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Pops out. I think having that roundabout option would be better than the left turn out around and on the north end way.
I think so, yeah. So. It'll always be, yeah, more comfortable for people.
What is the next steps for the traffic analysis?
So this basically has been presented to City Council, and it's been provided to City Council. It's been presented to our Transportation and Public Works Committee. We are planning on updating our transportation elements either this year or next year, and so a lot of the work that was done in this will be integrated into that transportation element. The plan is to add the 4 projects recommended in this study to our 6-year TIP in June, and what I've heard from City Council and the mayor is, hey, this is great, we like these projects, so we ballooned to $75 million in capital transportation projects. One thing we might consider is revisiting our transportation impact fee, and that's how much we charge each developer for their portion of impacts that these projects, that their projects create. So maybe that increases a couple $1,000 in the next year or two. We do a study and look at that. So we haven't decided yet if we're going to do that.
That's very helpful and insightful. One of the things I've heard from this commission, especially Commissioner Ryan, is that he more desires a LOS of C. And so if we were to take our, public works element and consider something different than a D, would that also help, find a suitable fee for traffic impacts?
I mean, the level of service is tied to your code, to North End Municipal Code. What it could do is some of these developments that come, all of a sudden they're creating a situation where they're not meeting our code more quickly, so we have a lever potentially for them to provide more off-site improvements. But the difference between LOSC and LOSD is, if you look back at Table 1, it's not much. It's like 10 seconds of time. So you go from D is at an unsignalized intersection, it's 25 to 35, and a D currently meets our code. It's the difference between E and D, D and E that doesn't.
But what you really find is when you set, most communities are setting their standards to a higher letter or a more congested situation because that's what happens. And frankly, the reason they do it is they don't want double or triple left turns. They don't want 6-lane roads. And they find that the character of the community and the walkability and the other things that are much more important, people would rather have that and the congestion than have the what happens when you go nuts on traffic. The other thing is,
that's very helpful. So
it's hard for every community to accept the more difficult level of service, but it happens. And it happens progressively from small communities to larger communities. There are some places in very urban areas where they've completely abandoned level of service as a standard. And they've abandoned delay because the thing that's more important is transit. The thing that's more important is pedestrian circulation. And that's the change that we're looking at. Now, I think in the future, a lot of people in the urban areas are saying that driverless cars are going to create a much better level of service because you can control the flow. One of the things that I think is brilliant that this community has done is to go with the roundabout solution, because if you look at the costs of improvements and the delay that happens when you put signals in, look what's happening when the state controls the one signaled intersection. And that's one of our biggest problems in town. We don't control that intersection, and we can't get them to move on changing the signal timing. So what do you think that does? This is really relates to your question a lot, because where it plugs up there, we're finding that if you're in the east part of town and you go on Google Maps and you want to get over to Bartels, it tells you to go on the freeway. It tells you it'll be a 4 to 5 minute savings because of that delay that happens on that signal that we can't control. So that is actually modifying driving behavior in this community because we can't control it. You don't have delay at roundabouts, and once people learn how to use them, it's a lot more efficient system. And if you were to put signals in, you'd have to wire them together, you'd have to have a command center, and you'd have to hire the traffic engineers to operate it. And the infrastructure in a small town to do all of that is just not feasible. So there are a lot of reasons why these decisions are being made that, you know, we need to explain as we get to these problems.
Thank you. I know we're spending money and we're talking about impact fees. It's like you build the dream and then you figure out a way to pay for it, and a lot of times it comes down to the developer's going to write the check. And we also, amongst this group, talk all the time about affordable housing. So I just bring this up every chance I get. Impact fees are great. They're directly tied to the growth, but they are exponentially expensive to the end user, because the developer is not going to sit and carry his 10, 20 grand on the books for 6 months while he builds a house without charging more for that borrowed money. So first of all, let's try not to raise the impact fees. If we do, somehow have the conversation where there's a delay in when those monies are taken, preferably at closing of the specific piece of property.
And that's a council decision, too.
I'm just giving it to you to say, hey, some guy at the planning meeting just bitched about that, so now you got it.
We do actually have a deferral of impact fees till final inspection or certificate of occupancy, or 18 months, whichever comes first, which you all saw that it went through here. So we just had our first applicant is using that provision and for the exact reason that you're stating, to make it more comfortable.
It'll make the difference in selling through one a month or one every 3 months.
Development
time-wise.
Yeah, it's a balance
there. Okay. Thank you, Mike and Mark, for coming. I really appreciate that. Planning Commission, go to the order.
Actually, I was going to ask, are there going to be opportunities for the public to ask questions on this or not? We can't.
It's up to you, Chair.
I think, is City Council going to bring it up at all?
Don't we have a public?
No. You would have it when we do the traffic impact or your transportation element.
Yeah, which will happen. I mean, we have our six-year TIP, which will have a public hearing in May, where we're talking about adding these four projects. So we'll have an opportunity for the public to comment then.
Yeah, so what he was saying was this will go into his actual transportation element, so in May.
I guess this also an actual defects in the study.
We can talk about those offline if you like, too.
Yeah.
Better form.
Yeah. So go to the order. Anything? I just had a quick question on the buildable lands report. Total permits issued is 408. Since when are we counting? Since what date?
These numbers, if you look at this, all of the numbers that are shown in here are annual numbers. So these, I believe these are for the calendar year. And so if you look for each of these, we give...
That was 2016, though.
Yeah.
The 408, the very first number,
yeah.
2016.
Yeah, 2016. And you'll see, well, actually, you have 2016 at 431, 2015 at 309, 2014 at 300, and for 17 it's 408. So the current numbers are, if you look at the very top of the report, it says January 1 to December 31. And what we do, and it's also in tabular form to read a little easier at the bottom, and what we do is we take a look at 4 years so that you get an idea of what are the trends and what's happening here. And Tom in the office does this, and he does a great job. He used to do these really thick things, but we all are looking at working smarter and just As Jack Webb says, just the facts, ma'am. So we're just giving you the...
Yeah, I just wanted to know, make sure I'm reading it correctly.
Sure.
And I appreciate the data because I was just looking at the map that I think Mary got from Public Works, the City of North Bend Development Projects, January 2017. And I think I counted 1,028 different housing projects. 382 of those are apartments.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to figure out if it's, you know, at all. I get that this is really geared towards the CED committee and economic development and that kind of stuff. I'm just
actually it's just documented information of what is really going on so that everybody knows. This goes out to all the council members, all the commissioners, and all the department heads in the city.
We asked for this
five years
ago.
But I think it's helpful to know what the trends are, you know, and see what's actually happening.
Yeah, I appreciate that he provides it to us every month.
Thanks, Tom.
Yes, he does a great job.
Just real quick on that. So 2016 year-to-date project evaluations last year, or 2 years ago now, was $14 million. This year, $77
million. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's huge, but there's fewer houses. Or building permits, less building permits.
Well, there are a lot of things that go into that. Particularly when housing value is going up, people tend to do tons of renovations. I mean, big. You know, whether it's adding square footage. In fact, we had one place on 6th, I believe, that was more than doubling the size, and it set off alarms for putting in public improvements. So Mark had to figure out a creative way to get some improvements in the neighborhood, but not body slam the guy into not being able to do his expansion. But we have, if you look right now at the work that's happening, lots of renovations, lots of expansions, lots of work done to existing residences as well as these. You're also getting commercial development where you didn't before. And you heard one of them tonight, Tanner Electric, but there are a number of commercial projects that are coming through. And in general, the valuation is significantly higher.
For those?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, some of those
buildings. And apartment projects as well.
Yeah. Okay. So it would be like one building permit.
One building permit with huge valuation. Could be $60 million. You know, so you have very large apartment valuations for buildings.
That makes sense.
Dave, what's the homeless shelter that your name is by?
Beg your pardon?
What's the homeless shelter that your name is attached to? What's
that? The homeless shelter that we're doing is one that happens every year. It's a temporary shelter that moves throughout the valley, and it's for the valley alone. The Slough Grange is where that's occurring now. And every year we issue a temporary use permit. It's a 45-day permit, very heavily screened, lots of involvement by the police and others to make sure, you know, everything is copacetic in the way it's done. And it's just to take care of folks in the really cold part of the year.
Yeah, right. We're grateful for it.
Big part?
We're grateful for it.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you for...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Anything else for good of the order? I have one final thing. As a reminder, in March, we will hold elections for a new chair and vice chair. All of you, I'm letting you know my term expires in May, and I told the mayor I will not renew. That leaves Mr. Lucky as the single person with years and years and years of experience.
Aren't most of us terms in May?
Yeah. Here we are.
Who's not?
So and Elizabeth.
I would nominate this gentleman.
In May.
You better show up to that meeting.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you got to show up for that meeting. You want to protect your turf.
Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Lucky, second by Commissioner Von Trapp. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Meeting is adjourned at 8:53.